Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, speaking to you live from my studio here in Washington, D.C. My name is Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal, and greetings to our listeners.
Alaykum salam, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Brother, doing well. I'm doing well. Had a few little things. I told you prior to the show, my mother-in-law got in a little accident, but she didn't get injured, and that's well. So everything is looking good, brother.
I'm very glad to hear that your mother-in-law is safe and uninjured. That's the blessing.
Yes, sir.
Glad to hear from that. We're also going to bring in one of our state representatives and also a co-host, Brother Rashid, out of the state of Delaware. Brother Rashid, how are you this evening? I think Brother Rashid is on mute, but he'll be coming in and joining us pretty soon. I also want to greet another.
Can you hear me, brother?
Okay, it sounds like he just came off.
Yes, he's in. I can hear you.
Yeah, I think I was still muted. My apologies. I want to thank you guys, man. I'm excited to be here. Hope everybody had a great week. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Wednesday is already here, but very excited about today's topic, so would love to hear what some of the listeners have to say about the topic that you guys are going to discuss today, so I'm very excited about it.
Well, actually, Brother Rashid, we're having this. We brought it back because of popular demand. Last week, as you know, we left with we had a full capacity on our radio. And it was left unfinished. There was still plenty of questions and comments even after 2 hours of a show that we thought we was going to just give for Valentine's Day, but we found that it was bigger than Valentine's Day. So leaving out Valentine, back with the show because it's a serious show and it's one that needs to be addressed. And that is 75% of African females between the ages of 18 and 50 are unmarried, and you have 65% of Caucasian females between the ages of the same ages, 18 to 50, and 65% of them are unmarried. And this is U.S. females. This is the survey was doesn't exist this large nowhere else in the world other than right here in the United States. So it's a very serious subject. We can see I never really thought about it that much until, like I said, last week's show. And so, again, back by popular demand. Before we go any further, I want to also introduce our Delaware National Educational Director. She's with us tonight. So we're going to bring her on and let her introduce herself, and of course she'll be with us for the rest of the evenings for her comments. Sister Swan, out of the state of Delaware, our National Educational Director. Ms. Swan, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening. Looking forward to our discussion.
Yes.
Good evening.
Glad to have you we probably would need your comments before the night's over more than the guys, but we do need male participation here. So we look forward to any males that care to come on and participate, and we have the males, and because when it comes to marriages, you have to have the couple. We will find out what's happening with those couples in the relationships and what's happening in our community, because that's what it's all about, is our community. So again, brothers and sisters, we're going to have open mics. We're going to open our mics up. We're going to have general discussions until we given our audience a chance to come on. But in the meantime, we will have general discussions. I will do the best I can to discuss this matter. But like I said, when it comes to marriages and what have you, I have a wife. I've been married to her now for close to 30 years, and that's the only marriage that I can really speak of that I know anything about is my own. But the subject of why there are so many marriages just not being performed in this country, I'm certainly not the expert to speak on that. But I can say that when it comes to the community, when it comes to the community, and of course we're talking about advancing our communities, having a situation where you don't have families, growing families in the communities, I don't even see where you're going to even have a community, let alone a very successful community. So as African Americans, we have our work cut out for us as far as our communities and our families. But and there is so much going on in our communities that I find very, very disturbing, and especially when it comes to some of the solutions that I've been hearing rumors on, and that is the crime that's going on in our communities. And that crime is becoming a national, almost like a national security threat. And this national security threat is coming from our kids, 13, as young as 13, and most of them are not even 18 years old. And they're saying that our largest amount of crimes going on in this country, you're talking serious crimes, that's being used with weapons in many cases. And you're finding that these crimes are being committed by our young folks, both male and the females. All sorts of crimes, retail crimes, carjacking crimes. You name it, you look like our young folks are into a crime. So when you, hear the subject of 75% of our marriages, 75% of the families are not married, and then I start thinking in terms of the problems of our youth, and I can't help but to wonder, how can our youth not have problems when they don't have the support of their families, and many of them don't have families, and we know if there is 75% of families maybe without both the mother and the father, In many cases, you would think the fathers are absent, and the kids are being raised by their mothers, the females. You can't help but to wonder, does this have a lot to do with the problems of our youth? Because you have a working mother who's, like I said, a working mother, because most of our females and our mothers, they have to work. The economics, economics, I'm coming back to that because I think that's the serious problems. But our females have to go out and work, and of course, by them working, trying to take care of what would normally be both the husband and the wife. In many cases, the female is doing this on her own. There is no way she can give the attention to the young folks that they deserve to have. And so, in many cases, the young folks are left to sort of to do for them by themselves. And then, of course, you have the problems of economics. And then even though you have a mother who is trying to work and provide for the families, her income many times cannot give the family the affordability that they need in order to stay even being a family, because the cost of living is just so high. Until mom's working full time, and many times she may even have to take on a part time job. So how much time does that leave with moms to take care of the of our African American kids? I look at this situation, and I constantly look at the way that the African American youth have to live. Then I look at the way that our Caucasian youth live, and I look at all the opportunities that our Caucasian kids have. They can travel. You look at this football, the sports arenas and the entertainments and all of the amenities and events that can go on in the country and in your communities, but you don't see the African American kids participating in these wonderful events because affordability. They can't afford to spend the weekend in Florida. They can't afford to spend vacations in the Bahamas, and they can't afford to like I said, many, many amenities. Go to the Super Bowl. Go to the basketball championships, and going to Las Vegas and different places where all these events are performed. Our kids, our African American kids, can't participate. Now, you don't think this has have an effect on a child, and you don't think, because first and foremost, the child doesn't realize, why can't I participate in all the things that I see on TV, all the things I like, all the sporting activities and all of these events that I see that's going on here in America, but my participation, we can't participate, and because, again, I can't afford it. And if they can't afford these things they would like to do, you don't think these same kids are going to still make it happen, even if it means that I have to go out here and break the rules because affordability. So it comes right back to what we've been discussing for the last 10 years, and that is economics. Even though we have some of the most powerfulest dollars as African Americans than any other Africans in the entire world, we have a distribution of billions of dollars, even trillions of dollars in certain avenues, monies that we put into the Americans' economy and the Americans' way of life, but none of those monies advance our communities. And so the cash flow of our dollars is not flowing into black communities. Those cash flows stays in the Caucasians' communities. And, of course, this gives the Caucasians, and there's no doubt about it, we was bought here as slaves to advance values and the monetary ways of life living in a capitalist society. We was brought here to advance the capital, the monies that it takes to live in a capitalist society. African Americans made this capitalist society, which is, of course, it was done from slavery, so you're talking about the white supremacists that created the slavery that, but my point is, the monies that we bring into this country and have been bringing into this country for over 500 years have made Americans, Caucasian Americans, the richest peoples in the entire world. And today, as you see here in the United States, their communities reflect that they are the richest peoples in the world, whereby our communities reflect that we are the poorest peoples in the United States. Even though, like I said, when it comes to the capital income, and the flow of the dollar and the cash flow, African Americans are distributing, are depositing, are spending trillions of dollars, and those trillions of dollars are going into the financial institutions of this country, banks, Wall Street, the retail chains, research, medicine, science, whatever. It is all of our monies, collectively, all Americans. But when you really think of Americans, and when it really breaks down to America, America is black and white. Even though you may have Europeans coming from many parts of Europe, once they get to America, they're no longer Europeans. Once they get to America, they become white Americans, and they blend in to America and blend right in into the white society. And they have the convenience, again, that is goes to the Caucasian community, even though, again, the black dollar is a huge support of our economical development here in this country. So, and like I said, one of the problems I am having with our politicians and what is being said about our youth crime, everyone is saying that we need to start enforcing the laws much more stricter than what we're doing. Our youth, we're just not locking them up. We're just not we're giving them too much of a break. And I am hearing this, and the disappointment of the whole thing is, I expect for Caucasians to say such a thing about locking up black folks, because they've been locking up, been locking us up for I don't know how long. I mean, when you start looking at the percentages of black men who are being arrested here in the United States, no country in the world has the prison population that the United States have when it comes to locking up black males. We have so many, and these millions, as a matter of fact, there are so many black males been locked up from the time they become around 18 years old. It's almost like their future consists of going from being a teenager, and once you're an adult, your future, one of your future, a large number of you, is going to be prison. And so locking up black males is something that's been going on, I mean, for the longest time. But to look at a continuing situation there where you see our youth who are suffering through economical disasters, no opportunities for them whatsoever. And like I said, the solution they're saying is to enforce the law and start locking up our black teenagers, because of the high crime rate that is being reported that's going on from our young folks. And I find it very disappointing, because I am hearing a lot of even our black elected officials saying the same thing, that we need to enforce crime a little bit more harshly. We're being too lenient on the crimes that our black youth are committed. We need to enforce the law. The courts need to stop releasing them and giving them the harsh sentences of prison, just like you would any adult. And I find that to be very disappointing, and a continuance of what happens when you have communities so deep in the poverty as you have our black communities all over this country, even though we have one of the highest and the largest cash flows in the world. As a matter of fact, statistics are showing, and it's been proven, that if you took the black economics and the amount of monies that we bring in as African Americans in the United States, we would have the economical powers of the fifth or the sixth largest nations in the world. We would have the powers of being as big as countries such as Great Britain and many other countries that we would be able to. And so it shows that African Americans, when it comes to being a people who should be extremely wealthy, we find that because our monies are not being controlled by us, and and that's another why. And of course, we thought for the longest time, until we found out here recently, that we didn't have any we didn't have nowhere else to put our monies. We didn't have other than putting our monies into Bank of America, all of the big rich banks. And that you see where we make our deposits. We didn't even know that there was any black banks. We kept saying that we need to build black banks. But even to build a black bank, many would ask, well, how do you even get started? How do you even incorporate? How much money do you need? And blah, blah, blah. And this is reasons why we don't have these banks is because our lack of knowledge or what have you, only to find that, and we know during the time of the Black Belt, which we represent, and we're trying to bring back the power of the Black Belt, we know that during the time of the Black Belt, this is during the time of Black Belt Wall Street and Booker T. Washington, and the Black Belt community that built our Black Belt communities, including Black Wall Street, that was that we named as our Black Belt Wall Street out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and our black communities. That black community stretched all the way from Texas throughout the South to include Maryland and Delaware, because that's where the highest concentration of slavery went on. And the Black Belt community changed that slavery into economical growth. And so during the time of the Black Belt, we had our own, name what we didn't have. We had our own banks. We had our own insurance companies. And going back to the banks, many of the banks that we're talking about that are still in existence go all the way back to the times of Black Belt, of the Black Belt business districts and Booker T. Washington. There's very few of them, but at one point there was thousands. You had black banks in just about every community in this country. You had insurance companies. You had retails. You had our own land developers. Everything, we built our own communities. And, of course, we know the destruction of these successful business communities, starting with successful representatives such as Marcus Garvey. And even today, rich, powerful companies, white companies in this country, still don't want to see the success that Marcus Garvey showed us and how powerful our dollar bill can be if we circulated our monies in our own communities. And that's what the Black Belt Business District was able to do, because they're the ones who lent powerful folks like Marcus Garvey the monies to become so powerful in this country. They're the ones who lent the monies to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that started the Nation of Islam, or the Black Muslims, they call it, back in the early 30s and 40s. But those Black Muslims had businesses all over this country. As a matter of fact, during the time of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because of the black cash flow, you had businesses, you had more businesses in this country during that time than at any time in history. And I'm saying that we can go on and on with the success, the Greenwood Business District, and which helped to finance the success of the growth of the Black Belt Business District. So again, the evidence of how powerful our dollars, and the evidence of what would happen if we kept the cash flow of our dollars in our communities. And I have no doubt that if our economical situations was continued in our control, our black youth, because they would see the success of our own black communities, they would see the success of their mothers and fathers, uncles and aunts, cousins and neighbors. And because, again, we have our own cash flow going through our own financial institutions. And that was abandoned. And the reason it was abandoned, because we became so powerful until Caucasians wanted to bought in what they call integration. And by integrating, we can now bring our monies and our dollars and ourselves into their communities. And, of course, when that happened, we shut down. And I say we because we're the ones who shut down the success of the Greenwood Business District. And we shut it down because we favored integration. And after almost 100 years of integration, we now see our black communities, because our cash flow went from our black communities and it went into the white communities, meaning that we started putting our monies and all of our economics, all of our cash flow started going into the white man's integrated community, and it started going to white folks. It's just that simple. And our black communities, we shut down that powerful economic growth, that powerful cash flow. And I have no doubt that this is what has created the problems that we're facing now with our youth. And this is nothing new. I mean, I can go back even when I was a kid. We came through great poverty. We came through segregation. And we knew what it was like to, I guess what I'm saying is that getting involved into crime or taking your way, there may not be been any other way for an African American to survive, because freedom and justice and equality is just something that we were deprived of. And so again, there is no, this business of putting millions and millions of African Americans in jail rather than giving millions and millions of African Americans opportunities. and not only opportunities that we deserve, because when it came to the patriotism of this country, no one served their country. Ever since World War I, the African Americans, and I say World War I, I know we can go back into the time of early revolutions and stuff like that, when it was back in the 1700s or whatever. But we're talking about ever since World War I, African Americans have served their country. No one. I wouldn't say better, but I will be glad to say just as good as any other American who saved and have our democracy intact. No one has served any better than the African Americans. But even during the time of African Americans serving their country, the same harsh racism went on in the militaries that went on in our civilian life. So racial discrimination has been designed to keep us bringing in monies to make white folks and white communities rich. And we as African Americans have to now start thinking in terms of going back to our communities. We can see that the integration is never going to work for us. But going back to our communities and having and creating, and I say create, but we really don't have to create. Like I said, we know for a fact that there are still banks that goes back to the time of segregation and the Black Belt Wall Street business districts. Many of those banks are still in existence. Many of them had to close, but there are a few that are still in existence, not all over the country, but in many, many different parts of the country. And we have gotten in touch with these banks. We've located many of them, and they're looking forward to coming on our radio station, our blog radio station, and speaking to the communities about making deposits back into our own black banks, all that are in many parts of our country, making our deposits, knowing these banks, making deposits back into the black banks, and you will, our general public, our audience, and those of you that are listening, because we need you to spread the word on this, that these black banks will be coming in, and they will be speaking to you directly about why you should make your deposits into their bank and how we can bring back the cash flow that made us very successful and made us very successful even though debt success was always angered or done something to white folks as to where they, well, I know why they don't want us being successful. Because if we are successful and become self-sufficient, then who's going to take care of them? So my comments and my suggestion is rather than continuing to lock up, especially black males, that we've been, that this country has been doing for years, but now we're talking about our kids. And like I said, I find it very disappointing. I expect white folks to come up with plans like they've been planning their segregated plans. But to hear African Americans saying that the solution is more law enforcement, more locking, I find that very disappointing, because if the economical situations was to have it, or as to where our kids are not criminals, our kids are just kids that want the same opportunities that any other kids, and I say any other kids, any other, especially Caucasians, but you have many, many ethnicities coming into this country now. And at the same time, you'll find that the African-American kids are right at the bottom of all of those economic opportunities. Everybody else might be doing a little bit better, other than, and I'm not going to say other than the immigrants that's coming into this country, because that's another story for another time. So, but my comments is, I think that when it comes to the families, because that's the first thing, must be intact. We must, our families, and when it comes to saying that 75%, and I say black women's being unmarried, but it's not 75% of black, it's 75% of the African Americans' families that are disarray. And that destruction, and I use the word destruction, but that's what it's causing, is an economical destruction in our communities. But we can do something about it. Because, again, that cash flow and the power of our dollars, we should be in control of. And if we're in control of our dollars, now the economical opportunities is coming back to our communities, because that cash flow is flowing through our communities. So that's my comment, my opening comment. I am going to turn it over to my co-host, and he will give us an opening comment. Then we're going to open up our mics. Brother Isaac.
Yes, Brother Bilal, thank you. I was going to say, one of the things that I see that's happening here is that with all of this political chaos that's going on, business and crime going on, both of them affect our community top and bottom. From the top, it affects our services, our community services and goods that we have in our community, from our mental facilities, you know, for our health, as well as on the bottom, like down the trash collectors coming around picking up trash and cleaning our streets. We all happen sometimes get underserved. And what I'm saying is that when we do collectively put our funds together, that's a powerful force. Putting our funds in financial, black African American financial institutions, that's going to let that money come back into the neighborhood to help develop businesses in the neighborhood, as well as homes for the neighborhood, as well as other resources that we may need to further, you know, family and community life. But the political situation, which affects business greatly, it's just out of hand for African Americans. And more of us getting tied up into the political and democratic scenery on that platform, I see it better for us to pursue ways and means to develop businesses in our community and support business, African-American businesses in our community, as well as participate in developing and networking various African-Americans that we know of. But what leads the way to all of that is the financial institutions, banks, how we spend our money, thank you, honey, and what we support in that community. So with the, like I say, with what's going on now in the political scene, we find out that the President Biden and his son, Hunter Biden, and his brothers, James, they'd all been accused of some wrongdoing. And we find out in this political arena that the Republicans, they want to impeach the president for saying that his brother had some wrongdoings. And then we come to find out what, that these wrongdoings that he was accused of being, getting money from Ukrainian government officials, and that it was all a lie. It was all a lie. And they're getting ready to impeach the president, mind that, send his son to jail. And we find out that this guy that they got the information from was, he had communication and contact with high Soviet Union intelligence people. So it's a game of spreading rumors, lies, whatever it takes to take our minds off of what we really need to be doing. Sure, we need to be mindful of the politicians and what they're going to be able to do for us once they're in office. But I think our focus, I know our focus should be on focusing on investing within our communities, putting our monies in places where it's going to benefit us, not going to the grocery store, not going to the beautician place, but somewhere to get something to eat, drink and be merry or whatever, or drive and be happy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about putting money back into the community and finding a financial institution, a bank, a credit union that's African-American, and be a part of that and join it. As we say, we know they're not in every state, but the states that they are in, we're going to be presenting that soon to let our listeners know that this is something that is imperative. This is the lifeblood of our community, not the money that we get in, but the, how we spend that money that's in our community when we get it. How do we direct that money? How do we spend it? Right now, I've heard a number, I've read up on a number of reports on how long our money stays in the African-American community before it goes up. This got down to just a couple hours or something like that, and that's just for it only to be in our community and circulate for 2 hours, that's sinful. It really is sinful under any standards for a community to be just meaningless when it comes to having money stay in their community and be able to do something for themselves. So this is what we're stressing at the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. This is what our program is about to our listeners, being able to, we network and market new businesses. We try to advise, let new businesses come on the show and tell us, what they're about, what they're offering the community, how we can help, how can the community help get them started, as well as coming up with new ideas, business ideas, and that. The New Africa Business Association, we have a number of people that are part on our program. Not just, we have a number of directors on our program, not just people that come on our directors. They have all kinds of services to offer you, educational, legal, financial, you know, accounting services. This is what New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association has to offer you. And this is what we're going to continue doing as long as we can. But we want our listeners out there to know, all those that's listening to us, we want you to be a part of us. We need memberships. Become a member of Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. Become a member, a business member or a listening member. Become a member and show us the support that we need. Continue to keep this program going for you, asking African-American businesses to come on and those that have business ideas to come on and let America, as well as outside of America, know what you are offering, what you're looking for. We can help in all of those areas, help you promote your business, give you suggestions for areas, information that you're looking for. So, again, you know, we have to focus and pay more attention to how we spend our money, where we put our money, and see if we can't find some African-American businesses in our community to put our money in. And that's where I wanted to start off tonight, Brother Bilal, and let some of our other directors start before you open the mic up, Brother. But thank you for letting me share that little piece right there for a beginning.
Okay. Thank you so much, Brother. Well, we appreciate your comments. We want to hear now slight comments from our national director, and that is Sister Aisha out of North Carolina. She will give us the greetings. As a matter of fact, her show will be coming on. We done talked so long, almost time for her show, but we certainly want to hear her, give her the greetings before we open up the mics. Sister Aisha.
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone. It's truly a pleasure being back tonight, and I do believe that the topic that we started last week, I have no problem with us continuing to talk about the divorce rate among our African-American families, between our women, of course, and our men. And this is a topic that's truly affecting every aspect of our community. And not only is it affecting the individual families, there's so much that's taking place on a national level that we as a community of people, we must become very attentive to what the Supreme Court is doing that will affect our positions within our families. And so this is a serious issue, and it has tremendous ramifications for the future of our children and our communities and our individual families. So whatever comments our audience have, we welcome them, and we need to continue to talk about this topic as much as we can until we can come up with some resolution on what can we do to stop this devastation that's taking place in our community of African-American women, black women not being married, black men not marrying the black women, for the ones, a large percentage of the ones who are getting married. So this is an issue. So Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, I welcome the conversation on this topic with our audience. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sister Aisha, for your opening comments. I want to now switch and go out west. Our director in the state of Oklahoma, I think Sister Williams, are you with us?
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters, and good evening, everyone. Yes, sir, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. We'd like to hear your opening comments, then we'll open our mics up.
Well, and I thank you, Brother Bilal, for the opportunity to, you know, be a part of the discussion. Because as they say that relationships, that is the, you know, the bond between male and female, that's the strongest bond out there. So therefore, you should already know, and we should already know, that there are going to be many roadblocks, because if it's one thing the enemy, that's what Mama them used to call it back in the day, if it's one thing the enemy do not want us to do, and that's to come together. So we need to start working on building relationships, lasting relationships with one another. Take our time to know the individual that you're, you know, getting ready to, what old folks say, getting ready to spend time with, so that you can know him and mm-hmm. he can know you, and, you know, you can build something solid. That's what we need. We need solid relationships that the children can see, you know, mama doing what she does, daddy doing what he does, and then at the same time, what they do together. Children need to see relationships, not just in the home, but in the community. You know, when we were children growing up, you know, one thing about segregation gave us an opportunity to see many, many facets of lifestyles. But because whether you were doctor, lawyer, thief, or chief, if you were of color, you were in the colored community. So children growing up, they could see a doctor, they could see an engineer, they could see a factory worker, they could see a non-employee at all. And then you can say, this is what I want to do. This is who I want to be like when I grow up. This is the kind of relationship I want. This is the kind of home life or home style that I want. So we need to start building relationships that the children can emulate and say, I want to be like Brother Bilal. I want to be like Brother Aziz. I want to be like Sister Ali. I want to be like so-and-so. I'm going to live my life that I can start planning on how I want it to turn out, not the way someone else has designed it for it to turn out. So that's where, you know, that's what I believe right now, brothers and sisters, that just start building stronger relationships with each other and throughout the community. I thank you for your time.
Sister Williams,
thank you so much.
I do believe, and, you know, I've heard some of the comments on some of the youth who are going through what they said, rehabilitation, many of them spoke the sentiments of what you're saying right now, and that is they're finding now that they are in a position as to where they can be heard, even though they may be in a youth program or something that have them somewhat incarcerated. Nevertheless, when you ask them to express themselves, they're so glad, because what you're saying, to have that mentor, to have the someone that they can learn from and say, this is my mentor. You're right. When we were coming up and during the time of segregation, we had many mentors because we could actually see the success of our teachers, our lawyers, our professionals, our factory workers, our mechanics, our builders. I mean, so what it took to build this country, because African Americans had so much with building this country, so who else would know about the success of doing other than the African American? So for our youth to be around, because they're not around this type of Mentos. They don't have any Mentos because they don't have anyone to communicate with. But I am not going to take up too much of the time. I am going to go to the mic and at this point. Come in as we can, and you may even find someone who's speaking, and we may want to interject something into the conversation that you're having. So this is going to be an open mic conversation, and you can expect that. So anyone have any questions, first of all, on what has already been said, or any comments that you would like to make about tonight's subject? Our mics are open, and we welcome your
comments.
Good
evening.
Good evening.
This is your education advisor, and I have already started the research on the topic. You and I chatted earlier, I think it was last week, on this ongoing topic, so I started quite a bit of research on it. I really appreciate all that has been said. Bernie Swan, Delaware. Children, the young people nowadays, as well as the adults also, they already have their role model. Unfortunately, the role model that we have assumed, and this is not only the black community, but America in general, is the media. It has become the role model. It's very negative, and it is very much ill-suited for our growth, but nevertheless, our children and our grown-ups have assumed the media as their role model. And because of that, that is also causing a decline in the values that we place on relationships. Also, through the research, it is showing that finances, of course, this too based on the media, is also the biggest cause of problems we're having not only in the black community, but it is growing very much in the other communities, just much more so in the black community. I will be sharing with you a plethora of information that I've already gathered. One of the first things I did was to do research on women's concerns for why there are these tremendous declines in relationship building, especially in maintaining a divorce. And then I went to the men to see what their list of things are for why they feel that a marriage is not suitable for them. And along with that, of course, I did the percentages with income because, remember, finances are at the top of these relationships being successful, if you want to call them successful. But here again, finances would also be a very negative way to build a relationship, yet in our culture, finances are the way to build a relationship. And as again, I'll say very unfortunate, but that is just America. In terms of women's concerns, financial stability, of course, is at the top in terms of the men not really up to par. Remember now, this is one of the basis of concerns with finances. Women are gaining in terms of financial stability. Men, not only black men, but men in general are losing instability of finances. So we'll talk about that as we say how this is impacting relationships and, of course, eventually marriage. Infidelity is at the very top of the women's list. Career opportunities are keeping women from looking at marriage as a priority. Independence goes along with having that career advantage. Security, they don't feel secure anymore in marriage. They are living more at home with their parents or with siblings rather than choosing a marriage mate. The expectations of the partners are not settled at the beginning of a relationship being established. Therefore, once in a relationship, what you were expecting, because you didn't pronounce it, you find out this person isn't meeting your expectations. There is also decreased happiness we have this idea of what happiness should be, only to find out that in a relationship, that is just a dream. But what is your definition of happiness? There was just plain not in love. More and more people are not falling in love. Remember how we used to really consider that to be a great thing, falling in love? No, that's not the thing now. And another thing going with falling in love is falling in love with physique. There, and, of course, that is with the media. You will find that it's more, especially for women, it is based on your body. It is based on your bosom. It is based on your behind. It is based on these things that have nothing to do with a true relationship building. But in our culture, exploiting the sexual attributes has become a way of you choosing a partner, and you can see where that's leading to. The divorce is being initiated mostly by women because they're finding that what they were looking for is not what they got, and so divorce is being initiated by women. Men tend to want to hang on, and we'll talk about that as we talk further about this whole idea of divorce. Men tend to hold on to the marriage because of the dependency. The woman is going to be almost like an extended mom. Now, the other thing is disloyalty. Here again, the women are saying men still feel they have the right to cheat. They have the right to have the roaming eye. And we'll talk about that when we talk about what men want in terms of the research. The big thing, they cannot afford family anymore. Men are saying just can't afford it, too expensive, but they still want the privileges. What there's some saying out there, benefits, I want the relationship and the benefits, but I don't want responsibility. And women are saying, you know, got to pull away from that. If you want my body, then you want to have more responsibility brought into this relationship. And, of course, another thing is education. Education is greatly impacting if women want the man or not. Now, in terms of the men's concerns, very interestingly, the men feel a loss of their social freedom. They see marriage as a commitment. They see it as a ball and chain kind of relationship. Another thing, they feel a loss of their sexual freedom. They feel that there is too much communication lacking. They feel there is too much shared values lacking. They feel that mutual respect is lacking. They feel they have to make too many sacrifices in a marriage. They feel it's too expensive. They fear divorce. And, of course, we'll talk about that later, of course, how his pocketbook is going to be impacted by that divorce, and, of course, the loss of sex without the commitment. They feel they should have the right, and we got to work with this with our young girls because men, when they find out that the woman has become more mature in age and in her finances, she's going to have more of I won't say a command, but more of an expectation from the men. So men, I'll put it this way, males, we'll talk about the difference between a male and a man because it's much more to it than just age. It is your maturity, not only intellectually, but morally and otherwise too. So we got to talk about what is a male, what is the a man, what's the difference there? Same with the female. What's the female versus a woman? But going back to what I was saying with the commitment thing, we've got to find a way for people to not have so much free sex. Remember we used to talk about the cow and the man is saying, well, gee, I have the beef, I have the butter, I have the milk, I have it all, so why should I buy the cow? Well, women are going to have to be much more responsible in not being so free and letting their body be available to the man, and then that's going to make men realize the value of the woman. But if you make yourself valueless, you're going to be treated valueless. All of that is part of the research I'll be sharing with you guys. But I do want to share this. In two-parent households, Asians make up 84.3% of two-parent households. Whites make up 82.2%. Hispanics make up 71.4%. Native Americans make up 63.4%. Blacks make up 46.9% of two-parent households. Yet, 67% of our black children are born into single-parent families. And I know others are going to call in tonight, so I have a whole book here to share with people. But nevertheless, I did want to bring out that your so-called jail, imprisonment, incarceration, that whole thing, that is all part of making sure your finances are controlled, because we are the fourth or fifth richest human beings on planet Earth. And that is not, for some, something that they will applaud, but something they see as a threat, because it's the society that we're in is built upon competition. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, because when you put the males in jail, you now control population control, birth control, and, of course, the finances that will go with that. And we'll talk about that, too. That's a whole story in itself. I'll stop for now so others can speak, and then I have, as I said, a whole book of things I want to share with you on this whole thing.
Okay, listen, thanks so much. Any questions for anyone have any questions? As I mentioned, you just heard, we welcome any questions that you may have for Ms. Swan.
Yes, I have a question. Sister Swan, when you talked about the women, the women's concern and the men's concern as far as relationships, are you saying that men feel that they can decide what kind of relationship they want to have with their wives as far as the have sexual freedom in the relationship, and that they have to make too many sacrifices in the relationship that they don't want to make? Are you saying this is primarily due to what the men are thinking in the, their position?
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, here in America, and I also study countries outside of America, there is a tendency, unfortunately, for people to have this idea of men will be boys will be boys. I won't say men, because men is another pedestal they belong on. Very few males are necessarily men, but we'll talk about that too. What makes a male a man? What makes a female a woman? But in terms of that, yes, here in our country and even internationally, men tend to have this perspective of, if I am doing certain things that they think a man should be doing, whatever they are, and they'd always, they some often fall short of what a woman thinks, but nevertheless, they kind of think that gives them liberty to be more socially free, and especially to be more sexually promiscuous.
Again, anyone who have any questions for Ms. Swan, we welcome your comments.
Let me follow up with you again, Sister Swan. You made a comment that the women have a concern about that one of the issues facing the women is the exploitation of their sexual attributes. And do you not feel, or any of your data even suggests, that that is also an issue with the women concerning the men? Do you get, am I clear?
Yes, you're perfectly clear. There is something about the female anatomy that outscales the male anatomy, and that is
mm-hmm.
international. As a result, men feel the exploitation of the beautiful female body, financially and otherwise, is to his benefit. That's why when we talk about, for example, I mentioned the media, if you notice on the media, very rarely will you see them emphasizing the male anatomy. But very often, the female anatomy is foremost. I don't care if you're watching a TV show, if you're watching the women on the giving their newscast or their weather forecast, if you're just watching them just sell a product on TV, the female anatomy is something that outweighs the male anatomy when it comes to selling the body. And as a result, your songs are going to, and this is, we can see this on our regular song, the songs will be doing things that are geared towards letting the female be used. Your movies will do it. Your pictures will do it. Your fashions will do it. You don't find fashion really overemphasizing the male anatomy, but the female anatomy, and now, my goodness, as my daughter was saying earlier, the behind has become top priority. The female buttocks has become top priority in terms of pictures and movies and your regular TV shows. Your regular TV shows now are almost becoming porn because they are pushing that, what can I call it? It's like a devaluing of the female's body. It is something to be exploited. It is something to be used. And we women and girls have to be very careful of not falling into that category of thinking that's going to get you a man. Unfortunately, the younger the girls or females, the more they think big eyelashes of showing their butt as much as possible, showing their bosom as much, is going to get the man. But your value is placed wrong. We'll talk about values in terms of this relationship building. Our values are very misplaced in this country in terms of getting. I remember when I was teaching my English class, and they were seniors, and I asked them, what draws you to a person? What attracts you to a person? More than 50% of the responses was and this is girls, males and females, they're behind. That was their response for what they were most attracted to, and the opposite sex to want any further interest in that person. Now, and we'll talk about how the gay world impacts things too. That's all part of my research. But nevertheless, go back to the heterosexual side of this thing. And so I said to them, well, if you're looking for an ass, don't be surprised when you end up with one in your marriage.
Mm-hmm. All right. Again, we still are. Anyone who have any questions, again, we our mics are open. Anyone who have any questions, we welcome your questions. Miss Wong, and I've been hearing the comments. Very interesting. But at the same time, when you hear, and not only from you, but all the comments we've been hearing ever since we got, even going back to last week, and we can hear many, many problems when it comes to the relationships, and most of them is negative relationships between man and a woman, and we can put special emphasis, look like, on the black man. But when it comes to my question, I think, is if you have this many problems, and most of these problems I ain't going to say what most of them are, but we have all of these problems, sex problems, lust problems, negative, irresponsible, not taking care of obligations, problems after problems after problems. And you look at the statistics of why so many are not married, but yet still these problems continue to manifest themselves. How are you going to solve the problem? That's my first question to you, in your opinion.
Well, I looked at several aspects of that. You have to look at the society in which you live. You cannot separate yourself from the society in which you live, but there's an expression some of my friends and I often use. You can be in the ocean, but don't let the ocean be in you. And so by that I mean we live in a society that is very materialistic. Our values are based on what you have, what you possess, what you attain. It's not based on the values that a person has in terms of their moral values, their outlook on life, their circle of acquaintances. It's all based on what do you have, what kind of clothes do you have, what kind of car do you drive, what kind of house do you live in, what kind of social, the things you mentioned earlier, how many vacations have you taken this year, an exclusive place, crazy stuff in the sense of building a relationship. So based on the fact that relationships in our country are based on monies, and we'll talk about that whole banking wonderfulness because my partner and I are really coming along with that, as you know. You've already gotten some information on that. But now back to median household incomes. Well, if relationships are based on money, finances, then let's look at the finances. Your Asians are your highest financial group. They average, this is the annual, this is from 1922, of course, not 23. The median Asian income is $108,700. The median income for the white household is $81,000. The median income for the Hispanic, all kinds of Hispanics, by the way, is $62,800. And the median income for the black family is $52,800. Look at that drop. So when the things like, look at Valentine's Day, when this whole conversation came up, what did you see on TV? Did you give her diamond necklace? Did you give her diamond bracelet? Did you, and it was always, did he give this materialistic stuff to her? Well, where are your values in a doggone necklace and earrings? And but nevertheless, yes, the man might get cursed out if he doesn't give her that nonsense materialistic stuff, but that is the basis of our value system in our country. And so when you look at the median income for blacks being $53,000 versus Asians being $109,000, come on, you can see where there's going to be some problem, not to mention all the others that fall in between, because we live in a materialistic society.
Yeah. All right. And,
I would like to say, Brother Bilal, this is Brother Nadir in Delaware. In paralleling with what Sister Swan was saying, if you look at the statistics from the percentage of two-parent households, those that are higher incomes, 84%, the Asians, they made more income, 108,700, white, 82.2%, et cetera, et cetera. My whole point, as you guys know, I've been saying from the jump, I think the first solution for our people is the lack of fathers. We have to change that before anything else will change. Because I think by having fathers again, I know in my neighborhood everybody had a father. And the two guys who didn't, one guy's father died, the other father's acted like his father, the other father divorced the mother, and other fathers acted like his father. But I think having the fathers will first do two things. One, the lack of discipline that we see in our youth, especially the young boys, you don't have that when you have true fathers. How you inspire young boys and discipline young boys, that starts with the father. And the positive image that our young girls will have of black men, if fathers are being fathers, they're later going to become young women who will have that same expectation and image of black men. But right now, because of the lack of fathers, in my opinion, I believe that is the first step to correcting all of these other things that you guys are covering. I just wanted to throw that in there.
You know, and Brother Rashid and our listening audience, and thanks for bringing that up, Brother Rashid, but when we first started looking at these statistics on marriages, we also looked at the statistics on, and especially black women's. Now, white women's, when you start talking about fathers, there was a diminish in fathers, and there's a diminish on white women's having babies. But when it came to the black woman, statistics are showing, yes, she's 75% unmarried, but when it comes to my baby's daddy, black women, they never, a percentage of having babies never went down with black women. They're still having the same amount of babies. They just don't have husbands. But as far as my baby's daddy, that will never decrease. So so it comes right back down. So yes, that what you're saying, Brother Rashid, is very important. I think again, is not so much as our population is decreasing. It is just that our community, and when you break up the family, you break up the community. And so breaking up the community is where the damage of the African-American community, because, again, if we lose our community, then where, then, like I said, and we've been saying for years, that our community is on a life support. And this is just an example of that life support breaking up the family and not having the husband and the wife, the father and the mother with each other. But as far as having the kids, that has never diminished. Again, it goes back to, I believe this is why, when it comes to the youth crime, is that, yes, our youth is a large multitude of them. But when it comes to the black child having the nourishment of not only his family but his community, they're lacking all of that. They don't have the nourishments of the family, and they don't have the nourishment of the community. And they are more or less left alone to defend them for themselves, and they have all kinds of negative positions going against them. That as children, they don't know how to deal with. And not having a responsible mother and a responsible father and a responsible community, I don't see how in the world our kids can succeed with the conditions that they are being, that they're living in, even as we speak. And like I said, and like I'm asking the question, it is, how do we correct that? Because we have the problem, and we have all kinds of reasons for the problems. When it comes to pointing the finger, the female can point the finger at the male. I can point the finger right back at the female, because when it comes to enticement and lush and all the lustful things that I like to do, I think both parties entice each other. Because when you start talking about the lady's behind, the lady knows her behind is beautiful. The lady knows that her chest is desirable. She knows that her beautiful lips and all the other females are beautiful creatures. They was created to be extremely beautiful to the male. And this is their power. Their power is how much the man desires them. But if they are very elusive with that power, and like I said, you got one man, and he's and there are four females, and all of them are trying to entice. This one man is enticed by all four of them. Then yes, the guy just like feel like he's in charge, and the female may find that my beautiful hips that I've been short out of wearing the tight pants and short mini dresses and all the things that I know that's going to be very enticing to this man. It's an asset for her, but it's also a failure. And then in the end, we come up with the solution that we're in, where like you said, why get married if I have the cow, and whatever goes with that statement. But I have it all. Why should I get married? Because the female is enticing me, and in many cases, it's almost like a competition that females are giving up now between each other. I asked a question, and I remember asking a question to some young ladies in a group setting, and I asked the question, and I said, you know, females, because all the beautiful stuff that they do, their hair, I mean, look at the money they spend on hair. Look at the money that they spend on all this, like I said, the artificial stuff to make themselves. They're already naturally beautiful, but if, for some reason, I need to have blonde hair. I need for my hair to, I need to lighten my, I don't know, the competition that goes on between making a, herself more enticing, and I asked the question, and you know, and I asked the question, who is, why, who is she getting so beautiful for? And I used to think that it was our males. She's getting all dressed up like that for the females. I mean, I'm sorry, for the male, and of course, you know, come out to your beauty shop, one of these places. My goodness, she's doing all that to make herself beautiful for me. And but to come out, but the ladies told me, said no. Females do not come making themselves beautiful for guys. The competition that females have making themselves beautiful, they're competing with each other. One wants to look better than the other one, just as good as the other one. So again, the question is, how is this problem going to be solved?
You've said some. Go ahead, because I have several things I want to share on that one.
Like I said, interject. Come on in as you can, Sister Aisha. You take over after me. I'm taking over all your show. I ain't gonna say no more after this. But
Brother Bilal. You do it so well, and I'm quite satisfied with the way the conversation is going. And this is, like I said earlier, yes, disaster preparedness is an important topic. This is also an important topic, and it probably has to be dealt with. So I'm very happy if we can continue with this topic. I have some more questions, and I want to respond to Brother Rashid's statement. Are you still there, brother?
Yes, ma'am. I'm still here.
Okay. I personally feel, based on all the data that we have been exposed to in our independent research, that we need that African-American male in the household. And if you all go back, the ones of you all who are over 50, if you think back when we had African-American males in the household, it was economics was a problem then, but we were able to rise up and deal with the economic issues. Oppression was the social oppression and racial oppression were issues, but we were able to go beyond those and still survive. What we're and we had the male and the female working together. Now we do not have that male presence. And so the female going out on her own, she's using all these artificial methods to bring what she considers happiness, which is not happiness because it's just constant deterioration of the family. So I do believe that, you know, God put a male and a female together. If we do not find a way to bring our men back into the household, or our men find a way to bring the female back into the concept of the household, if we don't work in that direction, we're going to continue with our own demise. And I think that that is the solution. And we've got to find a way that where 50% of the black males who have never been married in society, and those are the basic statistics, will want to be the fathers of their children from a single parent relationship, and to marry women who have children, and to be there. And I think that that is one of the major solutions. And I think it's the first solution, because there's still economics there in the community amongst the black female. There's still education opportunity, although that's in jeopardy now, and we'll talk about that later. But I think that that is what the direction that we're going to have to go in.
I totally agree. You know, the black man in the household is the key. I mean, I'm telling you, children who commit crimes, boys who are out here robbing people, guys who really have fathers in their lives, that they don't do that. They don't do it. You may still have statistics, but it will not be nearly as high as it is because of the lack of fathers in these children's lives. And like I say, when you have a negative relationship, the father's not there. The children constantly hear the mother talk about how bad the father is, et cetera, et cetera. It creates a whole other self-destructive image that we're creating as a people. So for me, I'm telling you, the roots to all of these problems that you guys can mention it from statistics and everything else, the root of it all is the black father being involved. Even if the mother and the father aren't married, they have to have a great relationship. The children need to see a great mother-father relationship. When my ex-wife and I divorced, we still had a great relationship, and I was heavily involved in my children's lives. But lack of fathers, when you see more women at football practice than men, when you see more women in the church choirs than men, women singing bass and baritone and choirs, the issue is on the men. I'm telling you right now, if we straighten that up as men, all these other problems, I believe, will come to a close if we do that.
But how do you get the men to straighten up?
I think that's the question, my sister. And I think what has to happen again is earlier, if you all remember, and you all are older than I am, but I was born in 1970. And like I said, one thing that we had a great respect for were the parents, mother and father, but the men. And like I said, uncles played a role, even guys who may have been 10 years older than us, 8 years older than us, they were mentors on, hey, you know you shouldn't be doing that, et cetera, et cetera. And this is going back to what I think Bilal is talking about, the community. I mean, yes, mm-hmm. it's the father, but then it's the uncle, it's the cousin. But more male role models in these young people's lives early, because once they get a certain age and they've been, you know, mom is having to work two jobs, they're unsupervised, they got a lot of free time, they got a lot of idle time. And TV and social media is the education, unfortunately, but it has to go back to fathers and men being heavily involved in their lives, being mentors, being positive. You remember the show back in the day used to be called The Rock? He was a trash man. I think his wife was a nurse. And that show definitely showed, you know, and again, that's old school morals, principles, et cetera. But he wasn't making a whole lot of money, but he was a man. He took care of his household. He went to work daily. He had a system of morals and ethics. That is what our young boys need to see from the fathers and men. As a result, it will create a greater respect that the young women see from their fathers, and they'll have that same regard for this when they see black men. And black men should have that same regard for this for the women. It all goes back to self-love and self-hate. And right now, as a people, a lot of the things we're doing is because we don't love ourselves. We kill ourselves much easier. Even in football, I see when a black quarterback is out there, brother's trying to kill him. When they tackle a white quarterback, they hold their hands up to let the ref know I'm not trying to hurt him. But they'll slam a black quarterback on his neck. And we do the same thing in society. Like I said, Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, he wouldn't have slapped Jimmy Kimmel if Jimmy Kimmel with that joke. He wouldn't have slapped a white comedian who had told the same joke. But we are comfortable disrespecting and hurting each other. And that is where the root, in my opinion, is. Until we correct that, we'll continue to see the same problem.
Well, the question then becomes.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, the question there becomes, how do you raise a male child into manhood? How do you raise a girl child into womanhood? Because your physical anatomy or your chronological age does not make you either a man or a woman. There is so much more to saying I'm a man. You're a male, yes. You can be 100 years old and be a man but never become a man. Same thing with the woman. 80, 90 years old, you can become still a female, but do you ever become a woman? So what we have to get back to is what you were just saying. Back in the day, women knew, the female knew more of how to turn into a woman. When you go into some of these non-American cultures, the girl knows at what point her parents have molded her from a girl into a woman. The male knows when his family has, especially in many African and Asian cultures too, and Latina cultures, they know the difference between a male and a man, a female and a woman. But we think as soon as we see the anatomy grow, that's a male, that's a man, that's that female is a woman. No, there is so much more to defining what exactly makes you male become a man. And of course, we look at the idea of the man in the household. If the man, and we have a lot of especially black women being murdered, if not constantly being mistreated, and I can't talk about just how much that takes place. So having a male in the house, when that male thinks that he has to be a dominating kind of creature, it's better, and the female knows it, get rid of him and get rid of him faster than fast. Because having him in the house, if he's a negative image, does more harm than good. We want men in the house and know the definition of men. We want women in the household, know the definition of women. And we're now looking at too much of if you reach a certain age and your body has developed a certain way, that makes you a man and a woman. No, it does not. Sometimes you never mature into what you really are supposed to be, all of which we need to talk about. And one of those things is we're basing how we raise our children on how society says what the child should be raised like, rather than going back to the old standards of what our great-grandparents and grandparents and so forth used to do in raising children. Stop going by what is the current way of raising a child, because you can see it's failing in their own community, so why are you duplicating something that's not working even in their own communities? My husband and I have 53 years of marriage, but we know that that takes a whole lot of mutual understanding and growth. 53 years, we're still growing.
Okay. Very excellent. Let me just say this,
yeah,
if you don't mind. As far as human beings, and their contemptible ways, I'll put it that way, that's going to, in my opinion, not unless you, other than one who can say they are spiritually guided and they're trying to go by the golden rules, you know, and but at the same time, being contemptible consists of just about any type of sin one can imagine, and it continues to multiply itself, because when do you stop being contemptible? So as far as man and woman's contemptible ways, that's something that I think it can be controlled. But my point is this. My point is, everything that we talked about so far, it all has something to do with economics. Everything that we talk, all the problems that we see that is going on in families or in the communities, are as far as man and woman and our kids even, has something to do with economics. Brother Rashid just mentioned that he was born in 1970. Well, and then our Sister Swan, she was giving us statistics on the Orientals and how they are now the highest economical incomes in America. And those statistics are true, because when it comes to Orientals and unemployment and what have you, you haven't heard any problems with Orientals and economics or unemployment. You just don't hear it. But around 1970 or so like that, it's when the Orientals was coming into this country. We know, because we was in their country, and when the war was over, millions of them came to the United States. And we know they went to all parts of the country, but here I can only speak for what went on here in Washington, D.C., and a few places that I have visited, but living here in Washington, D.C., we all witnessed the Orientals coming to town. And when the Orientals came to town, the first thing they started selling us was chicken fried rice and wings and rice. They had those chicken fried rice, I mean, almost every block, wherever you almost saw a liquor store, you saw an Oriental putting up something that had something to do with selling you chicken fried rice, wings, and that mumbo sauce. Now, that mumbo sauce don't exist nowhere in Asia. Go all over China, go all over the Asian countries, Philippines, Vietnam, I don't care. They don't know nothing at all about no mumbo sauce. But here in the United States, we want our fried rice and our shrimp fried rice and our chicken fried rice and our chicken with wings, and we want mumbo sauce on it. I'm saying all this to say, black folks made Orientals the richest folks. It's like they made white folks the richest folks in this country. From the 70s until now, and I haven't counted the years. What is that, about 40 or 50 years? So in the last 40 or 50 years, African Americans spent so much money buying from the Orientals, because white folks didn't buy from them. White Orientals was having problems with folks because the white man, you know, they were another minority. But those Orientals opened up those chicken fried rice places all over the country, and black folks was right there buying it. I don't care if it was a nice or if it was a little old shack somewhere. You saw the black man there. As soon as they opened up, they couldn't even, many of them worked all night long. Anytime day or night, you can go into the city, and if an Oriental was going to have his shop open as long as the city ordinance would allow them to. So, but who was in there a place of business? The black man. The black man made the Orientals, and today you're right, they live in mansions. They don't live in black communities. So when last time you seen an Oriental as your neighbor? Now, the Orientals, matter of fact, they used to live in the white communities, the best ones, but now they done built their own communities. Their own communities in Loudoun County and all like that. Loudoun County, Virginia, Loudoun County, Virginia, are you joking? I mean, you're talking about something that was deep in the country. Today, Loudoun County, Virginia, is more valuable than Fairfax, Virginia. And we know Fairfax, Virginia, that's where all the rich white folks live for the longest time. The Orientals, they lived there for a while, right beside the rich white folks, because black folks was making them so much money. But the Orientals now have moved and moved to their own communities, Loudoun County. And now Loudoun County is probably one of the most valuable communities in this area. Again, but you look at the Orientals, and like I said, we made all this, we made him rich, but that Oriental, his money continues to flow through his community. When it comes to an Oriental, and you see most of the cleaners, and this has been going on now for ever since the 70s, you take your clothes to the cleaners, it's surprising to walk into a cleaner's and you don't see an Oriental not owning the cleaners. All over this country. And so again, African Americans made this Oriental in just the last few years, since the 70s. And today that Oriental stands out as to where the black man and the white man, he's exceeded us as far as his incomes, statistics. And so that is an example, brothers and sisters. See, that's an example about how powerful our black dollars are. And if we control and we kept our cash flow and we start selling our own chicken and rice, we start having our own cleaners, we start having everything that we made, not only the Orientals rich, but the white folks rich. You see, that's what I mean. We as African Americans have made this country the richest people in the world, and we being at the bottom, but they being at the top with our monies. That's why it's so important that we keep have a cash flow, but we can never have that cash flow as long as we're giving our monies away. As long as we're spending our monies in businesses other than our own businesses. In order to have that cash flow, you got to have your own financial institutions. That's what the Orientals have. They have their own. Do you think they're going? And if they are putting monies into the Caucasians banks, guess who is on the board of directors of these banks along with the white men? The Orientals sitting right there. But at the same time, you go to the average bank, financial institutions, brokerage, real estate, but I don't care what it is. All the monies that African Americans are putting into these businesses, how much say do we have as far as monies coming back from our investments, from our portions of spendings, from our portions of the of making this country so powerful? How much of that is coming back to our community? And if you look at our community, you know that the answer is none. And that's why when you look at our communities, we're not accounted for anything. We're not accounted for nothing. Because why? We give our monies and make everyone else rich. And, of course, when it comes to, like I said, being contemptible, and lust for this and lust for that, all human beings, including that Oriental, he's contemptible, just as contemptible as we are. But when it comes to making certain that his finance, because he knows how important it is to be broke, he came from, and we experienced. When it comes to poverty, those of us who went over in the Orients and many parts of the Orients countries, Vietnam, Thailand, Bangkok, I mean, it goes on and on, you could not find anyone any more poor, any communities any poorer than those Oriental communities. I mean, rat was a delicacy. You think that might be something that's a joke, but it's not. Yes, rat was eaten. It was a delicacy. That's how hard food was to come by. That's how poor these folks were. And when they came to the United States, where there's cash flow, they knew how to organize themselves. They know how to become... A hundred of us is going to open up the first restaurant, and 100 of us are vested in that restaurant, and 100 of us is going to open up 100 restaurants in a month's time. 100 of us is going to open up 100 cleaners. We're going to do it every month, and the first one is going to be your restaurant, wherever it may be. The second one is yours. They're right in line. So again, when it comes to the cash flow and the power of our black dollar, brothers and sisters, we have to control that. And that's why these black banks that we are about to present to you and start spreading the word, because these black bankers could be speaking. If it's not next week, we're certain. And we're going to have these black banks on here, ready to talk about their banks and talk about African Americans making their deposits into black banks. And the day that we start doing that, especially when we get our churches, because when we talk about huge the churches alone, put over $1 trillion in these white banks, and we know it's all stays into the white community other than what the preachers take out for themselves. So again, we as African Americans, we make everybody rich, but we can make ourselves rich, but we must become become economically with each other. We still, even though our radio is about to go off, I am going to give a 5 or 10 minutes, we can do that, extension on any comments.
Brother, I just want you to know one thing. You mentioned the you mentioned about the dry cleaning. It was a black man who invented dry cleaning in America.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to know that's one of, and that's another thing we can talk about. We have so many things that we were inventors of, and of course in slavery they were inventing, but the owners took over ownership because they were slaves, so they weren't allowed to patent anything. But isn't it interesting that dry cleaning that you mentioned was invented by a black man?
No, I'm not surprised at all, because again, as slavery and we were the cleaners. We did clean the white folks' everything. So
that's right. That's why the inventions were done, so that the black man and woman were trying to make life a little bit easier on their slaving that they were doing for their masters. And so that's why the everyday ordinary stuff that we use came from black inventions, and it got to the point where we were able, once they called it so-called free, we were able to at least get our inventions patented. But before that, they were making inventions, but their owners were the ones who got the rights to claim it.
So again, yes. And in closing, it, and anyone, any quick comments? We got about 5 more minutes before we would have
you
to
know,
close.
I do want to say that when we talk about the issue between black and the black male and a black female, we have to look at what is taking place in our society now. And we know that twice as many black females graduate from college than black males. And now this is going to be even more impactful, because if you remember in June the 29th of 2023, the Supreme Court gutted the affirmative action, which was part of Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act. And that it was during that 50-year period of Title VIII that a large percentage of African Americans received higher education. They got jobs where they could be somewhat competitive with their salary. They made tremendous economic gain in this society. And a lot of that was due to the affirmative action programs. I was director of affirmative action for Rutgers University, and it was my duty and my commitment to my people to bring in as many African Americans into that university as I could reach out to. They got their degrees. They became faculty members. They had stable families. They were making decent salaries, still not the same as that white assistant professor, but they were climbing the ladder. Now that affirmative action has been completely gutted by the Supreme Court, we're going to see a tremendous impact on our families. The black female will probably still be making more than the black male, but this poses more resistance to the black male to come back into the family structure and be head of the household. Makes it more difficult. And we as African Americans, we're going to find ourselves not able to go and get those jobs, because without affirmative action, it's not a racial issue anymore. You don't get in the university because of the color of your skin. You get into the university based on your experiences as an individual, not on the basis of race. This is the new language. Your experiences as an individual is the considering factor for you getting into these universities now. And that is such a subjective statement, but that's what the Supreme Court has said, not based on race. So we got to be mindful of these things that are happening.
Yes,
you know, another paradigm from the research that I'm doing is
something.
Yes.
So we're going, our time is definitely running out. I know we could continue this, but that extended a few minutes that I put in for it, they're going to close us down pretty soon. But again, the power, like I said, these banks are going to be coming here. They're going to be speaking to us. The day that we put our monies into our own financial institutions, as to where these banks now, because banks cannot grow unless the community that makes deposits into the banks, unless those communities are growing, the bank can't grow. But the bank can't even consider growing unless they get your deposits. Put our deposits into our own communities. And I think you're going to see our problems being solved. As far as our contemptible, I don't want to speak on how you're talking. As far as our economical problems, having our monies flowing into our own financial institutions, where our financial institutions can have the cash flowing through our community again, you're going to see, in my opinion, the success of black folks all over again. Brothers and sisters, we thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Can I say something?
And again, our time is just about up. You got about maybe 1 minute.
I was going to say, get the black banks to go for mortgages. Everybody needs a place to stay. We need land and houses and businesses. Make sure the black banks can handle that kind of success. Everybody has a mortgage. We can pay the banks that way.
Yes, brother, be on here when the banks come on to speak to our communities and ask them about. That's why these banks are coming. That's why they want to come on. You see, they want. They've been sort of denied the community. So the questions of mortgages, the questions of business, the questions of our communities growing financially depends on our banks. But we're not making deposits in our banks. But these banks, the few that are still alive and incorporated and been around, some of them for almost 100 years, they're still in existence. They're going to be on this show. They're here for the same conversation we're having tonight, you'll be having with these banks. And like I said, we can expect for these banks to start coming on here within the next week or two. I will be sending out information. Those of you who are not on our email list, send us your email at nabassc@gmail.com so we can send you the information on our scheduling programs. And because Sister Swan and Brother Isaac, how many banks are there nationwide? What is the numbers of the banks totally?
We have a total of 42 so far, might be 43 now, that we have already contacted, and they're in the process now of getting scheduled and be on the program.
Yes, and that's my point. So 42, we can't bring on 42 at one time. So
that's why they have to get in touch to be scheduled, and they know that.
We will be scheduling these banks. I have Sister Swan has sent me the name of about 8 or 9 that I am already being in contact with, but we're going to be in contact with all 42, and all 42 is going to be coming on the radio station week by week. So
get your next 8 or 10 next week. I'm breaking up into segments.
Thank you so much. So spread the word, please. So brothers and sisters, again, until next week, good evening.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation, would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say. And how long have you held your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation, would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?